Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When I saw that property's condition after the tenants left during that 18-week period, mate, it was completely a different property. Doors missing, stolen ovens, stolen hot water systems, holes in walls, drawings, feces on the floor. You name it, mate, this property was absolutely ruined.
Hey! This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Jeremy Anazani, who in his 20s already owns 12 properties in a portfolio worth over $5 million. He will recount tenant horror stories of missing doors and stolen ovens, how he recovered from these experiences, and how you can learn from them too. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. Anazani proves that research really is king when it comes to investing in property. With an accounting degree already under his belt, he undertook an entire year of research before he bought his first property.
My name is Jeremy Yannazzelli, and I'm a partner with two accounting firms located in the western suburbs and southwestern suburbs, being Parramatta and Liverpool, Keshub Chartered Accountant and VJR and Associates. I'm also a partner of a legal firm and a bookkeeping firm as well. My journey obviously is quite a little bit, but I do enjoy obviously doing the accounting side of things. That's my passion, and also my passion secondary to that is property investing.
So what does a property investor with so many positions do in a single day?
My life is filled with obviously putting out fires. So being an accountant, we obviously experience a lot of different things that my clients go through, whether it's just simple tax and accounting questions all the way to complex structure questions. My clients are buying properties every day and selling properties every day. And I spend a lot of time advising the clients of the tax outcomes and tax-related positions that one would be looking at when selling or when buying. And myself as a property investor, if I could describe myself in a short couple sentences, I'm aggressive but calculated. So I like to always continue the momentum with property investing and always try to ensure that I'm developing my knowledge and skills. But on the other side, I'm always being very calculated with the numbers and the risk that I'm entering to, as any investment has a bit of risk. And it's all about ensuring crunching the numbers to mitigate that risk as much as we can.
The son of migrant Italian families, Anazani grew up in southwestern Sydney.
I've spent a majority of my life living in the southwestern suburbs of Sydney in an area called Casula, located between Liverpool and Campbelltown. I went to school in those areas and went finished high school in those areas, and obviously went to university in those areas while working full-time after I finished my HSC. Presently, I'm living in an area and called Leppington, which is in the southwestern suburbs again, in a new estate called Willowdale on the Cannon Valley Way. And I base myself out at Parramatta, as well as a little bit of time out in Liverpool. That's a little bit of, I suppose, where I grew up and where my roots came from. My family are a migrated Italian family. Initially, both started their sides out in the western suburbs, but first off was in Griffith. So we come from a bit of an agricultural background. And both sides of the family migrated to Seven Hills and then Minto. So we've predominantly lived in that southwestern corridor, being closer to home, obviously a little bit cheaper, I assume, as well, back in the day. That's a little bit about where I grew up, mate.
From his grandparents to his parents, education has been valued highly in Anazali's family as the means to a better lifestyle, especially for his grandparents arriving in Australia in the 1950s.
Migrated at a very early age. I do, if my memory serves me correct, I think they actually were born here. But grandparents migrated here in the late 50s, early 50s. Spent a little bit of their time, obviously, finding work wherever they could. English was a bit of an issue back then. But my parents now, obviously education was very important to my grandparents, and they did ensure that my parents did go to school and university. And my father has been an accountant, believe it or not, for about 39 years. Served about 35 years of that at PricewaterhouseCoopers, been one of Australia's largest accounting firms. And my mother has been a school teacher for the last 25 odd years. So always education was a very strong foundation in my upbringing, as it was for my parents as well.
Although he'd prefer not to admit it, Anazani was never sold on following his father into accounting. But soon enough, he fell in love with the intricacies of the profession.
I very rarely tell people the story, but initially accounting wasn't something that I was keen to get into, because as we can all be aware, we think it's quite a boring job sitting at an office all day and crunching numbers. Yet do we know there's so many different areas of accounting one can get into. So, you know, I was a bit, hesitant on entering into university with an accounting major. But quite quickly, soon after I started university, I got my first job in an accounting firm and never looked back and enjoyed everything that came with it. I quite realised that it's more about the advisory, more about knowledge rather than sitting down and punching some figures into a calculator. So it was something that I believe my father always had his intention, that his son would enter into the accounting realm. But it wasn't something that I really grasped until I was in my late 18, early 19 years of age, and that's when I really understood that there's a lot more to accounting than sitting behind a desk and hitting numbers all day. It's about real life experience, and it's about converting that real life experience to help your clients. So that's why I fell in love with accounting quite early on, because I realised that there's just so much more to it.
With his father also an esteemed accountant, Anazali feels blessed to be able to work with and be mentored by some of the best in the business.
It's a two accounting firms which I'm a partner on, one of them which I'm transitioning into, but fully take over the partnership in July, which is Keshub Chartered Accountant. That one there I've been working with for the last 8 years, and VGR and Associates is an accounting firm that I share with my father, both 50-50, and that was his transition out of PwC and into VGR and Associates. So I'm lucky enough to have two fantastic mentors, and both and Manzura, which is my other partner, actually used to work with my father at PwC. So I'm very, very lucky to have two extremely experienced mentors guiding me throughout the process and then throughout my many years to come in this occupation, mate. So that's a little bit of where I sit in between those two accounting firms, a partner in both, mate.
It is clear that along with an appreciation for learning, he was also instilled with a strong work ethic from his family.
I was not sent to work at a young age, but I wanted to work. I've always loved standing on my own two feet as much as I can. I'm a big pride person. I always try to do things by myself where I can. So I started my first job at a pizza shop, as all 14-year-old kids do, and worked there, you know, during my school life for about 2 or 3 days a week, mostly on the weekends. I also held a refereeing position. So I used to love soccer, and I still love soccer, and I used to referee soccer during the winter on my weekends as well. For a little bit of cash money, obviously less a little bit of the tax that referees used to pay to the governing body. I did that up until obviously my teenage years, my formative years. And then during my summer vacations, that summer vacation between school and university starting, I actually mowed lawns, believe it or not. I was worked in a golf course mowing lawns for those 9 weeks, up at 6 o'clock in the morning and at home by about 2:30, 3 o'clock. And I quite quickly realised that it wasn't me.
After this realization, he decided to pursue a job that would enact a less demanding toll on his body, and naturally, he fell into accounting.
I got to have a taste of a little bit of, I suppose, a harder occupation, a bit more taxing on a young body. And I quite quickly realized that I think, no, an office job is the best way for me to go, especially working in the summer, 40 degrees heat, whippersnippering and cutting lawns at a golf course. So that was where I and the jobs that I held up until obviously I entered into a full-time role as an accountant when I was about 19.
Working in as an accountant since 19, it's unsurprising that Anazali has proved to be an accounting expert at only 27 years old.
It's been almost heading into my ninth year as an accountant working full-time, and I'm loving and learning a lot of things along the way. So it's been great, mate. It's been fantastic to apply that to my university degree, but it's also been fantastic to apply that to some of the things that I'm doing today in my property investing or in just creating different businesses and becoming a little bit more of an entrepreneur.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear about Anazani's learning curve beginnings in property.
Problem was, is that getting tenants to stay there longer than 3 to 6 months became a very real problem. And getting both sides rented of that duplex was also a very, very real problem as well.
As well as the moments that made him go, aha.
Oh, mate, I've had that been probably one of the significantly hard moments.
You'll also learn how you can follow his next property investment step.
So I'm going back through my existing portfolio and finding where I can add value, and that value could be through some subdivision, that value could be through some granny flats.
Hey podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. From a young age, Anazani quickly realized the potential success and relatively low risk of property investing, which, as he says, anyone can do with the right education.
Property has always been very ingrained into me, definitely as a young man. I think it comes back to a little bit of Italian heritage and culture. Definitely they didn't trust the banks, and property was, I suppose, their way of securitizing their investment. I was also lucky enough when I started working at Keshub Chartered Accountant to be working alongside my soon-to-be partner, Manzurul, and I saw his property portfolio at the time, which was in his early stages, but nevertheless very impressive. And I was working with a lot of my clients who were also property investors. At that stage, again, most of them with five or seven properties, and now they hold anywhere upwards of 20+. I saw quite quickly how important the power of leverage was, and being able to borrow for an asset and getting a gross return on that grossed up value being the market value of the property. So I saw quite quickly the yields and the returns that people were getting. And it was at the start of, say, that 2009, heading towards that 2010-2011 period where properties really started to move. So I said to myself quite quickly that if these people who are working and working quite hard and saving their money are able to get these, you know, $50,000 to $60,000, $70,000 a year market value increases, or otherwise known as equity, in 1 year without working, I knew straight away where my money had to be. Now, I knew quite quickly at my age as well that the share market was a little bit out of my grasp, but there was a lot of variables involved. Movements, you know, just with one comment from a director could send the price upwards or downwards. However, property was a little bit more secure because it's something you can see, touch, feel and smell. It's there. It's not going anywhere. If a director from Telstra mentions one bad comment, it doesn't reduce the price of our property as such. So I knew straight away that that is where I wanted my money to be. As I said earlier on, it comes back down to a calculated risk. And when I do the figures and when I do the calculations, the risk in property, what I saw even at such a young and early age, was that it is a secure investment, and if you buy right, it can have the right yield and dividends for yourself in the future, being in the equity growth. So that's why I started to get into property, because I saw a lot of people who weren't rocket scientists becoming very successful and becoming very wealthy, and now using property as a tool to gain that wealth. That was why I started.
Being constantly surrounded by people with large portfolios is one sure way to learn and grow your own portfolio. His clients, with up to 70 properties, provide the best property investing education.
We're very lucky. We're very lucky. We manage around about 9, and it's a blessing. And I always tell my clients that I'm very fortunate to have the clients that I do, because every day I'm learning from them. Now, one possibly can't know all the areas to invest in Australia. It's just too many. But when you have 950 client groups lodging anywhere between 2,500 to 3,000 tax returns, mate, I learn a little bit off all those clients. And I would say very conservatively that 95, if not higher, percentage of my clients own properties. And those clients are not owning just one or two properties. Those clients are owning anywhere between the vicinity of five upwards of, say, 60, 70 properties. And some of these clients are self-made. Some of these clients are transgenerational investors where they've inherited a portfolio, but they've gone on and made it quite larger. So I was very lucky to be challenged by my clients about specific areas, properties and calculations and feasibilities. And it encouraged me to go out there and look at these particular areas and gain my own research. So I've learned a lot, mate, and I've been able to gain my knowledge and a bit of experience from some of my clients' mistakes. Or some of my clients' successes. And at the same time, I always believe that when you are challenging your accountant, it encourages them to go out there and learn more themselves. So, mate, it's definitely not me sitting by book every night for 10 hours. It's a lot of challenging from my clients and a lot of information sharing. I do believe there is power in numbers, and if we have more people around us searching and wanting a common goal, we can all learn off each other. And that's what I did, mate. I spent a lot of those early formative years learning from a lot of my clients and asking a lot of questions, replicating their successes and obviously not replicating their failures. So that's been a very good help for me, mate.
Rather than give specific property or financial advice, he strives to guide his clients in the right direction for them, simply by sharing knowledge and experiences.
Due to some restrictions, obviously not being, say, a financial planner, I can't actually recommend specific areas to my clients, nor can I tell them to buy a property or not buy that property. It's more of a conversation that we have based on the pros and cons. They may ask specific experiences that I've had in that area or other clients that have had in that area, and I do share a lot. So I'm a big believer in what I've learned. It's there for me to share with everyone else. But only really specific to my own journey, maybe a couple of my other clients' journey. It's not really information that I'm giving them so they can make a cutthroat decision based upon what Jeremy says, but it's more so just sharing the knowledge. And I try to do that with a lot of my clients, where I just share the knowledge about, say, what I've done or what I've looked at in that area and what things that they should consider when they look at that area. And then we really go through the pros and cons and we make sure that the numbers do work in relation to their goals and objectives, of course.
At only 27, Anazani already possesses an impressive portfolio.
So at present, there's about 10 investment properties which I do hold. And there's a duplex which I'm currently building in Leppington in the estate of Willowdale. And that duplex should be completed within, say, the next 6 to 8 months, taking the total property portfolio holding up to 12, because that will be Torrens titled when it's finished. That's the value kind of fluctuates depending on how we look at it, and it really depends on the end result. But I would assume the value of those 12 properties on a gross basis should be anywhere close to around about, say, $4.5 million, maybe $5 million, depending on end results. And the total equity in that portfolio should be close to around about $1 to $1.5 million.
With a notable equity of around 25% from these properties, it's undeniable that he knows his stuff. He attributes this knowledge to his intense research ethic, which he dates back to his very first property.
I started my first property in areas that I knew. So as I said, I grew up in the area of Casula, and I knew the Campbelltown region and Liverpool region quite well. And at that stage, the prices were fairly different back in 2011, 2012, I think maybe late 2011. And I researched that area for quite some time. So I was very, I procrastinated quite a bit, mate, to be very honest. I spent about a good year researching the market, researching that area, attending lots of open homes, attending lots of different auctions just to get an understanding and feel of what the conditions were in the market. I spoke to a lot of real estate agents, wasted a lot of real estate agents' time. I have to say sorry in advance to all those people.
Despite the time that Anazani believes he wasted, this research and experience has proved vital to his overall property investment journey.
It all was part of my learning and it was all part of my journey. And it, what it did was it gave me an experience to understand what I didn't want in a property and what I did want. And I remember getting a phone call at about 9 o'clock at night from a real estate agent. And they said, Jeremy, I've got this 3-bedder, 2-bath, 1-garage home in an area of St. Andrews. It was on the market for about $350. And he said to me, Jeremy, look, we do need to make a quick pace on this particular property. There's some circumstances that the vendor's going through. And straight away, through my learning and journey, I knew that this was an opportunity for me to find a property at a good price. So I made an offer over the phone and I said, look, I'm prepared to pay $315,000 and I'm happy to sign a contract tomorrow at 7 o'clock on the basis I look at the property. And as you can be aware, a real estate agent would be quite hesitant to get up at quite early and see and take someone to visit a property at 7 o'clock in the morning. But I made it very clear that I want this property and you'll be there at 7 o'clock because I will sign it if it is good. And it is good as you say it is. So there I was at 7 o'clock in the morning. I spent 30 minutes, looked at the location, looked at the property, tried to absorb it, see anything that I could notice straight away. And the contract was signed by about 8:30 in the morning. And I purchased my first property within the space of 12 hours for $315,000. And today's value, it's worth about $600 to $650.
Despite such a hasty decision, he really scored an amazing property as his first purchase, and one that was located amongst all the infrastructure you could ask for.
It was on the cusp of a very, very good area called Denham Court. Now, Denham Court, there are, at this present time, $3 to $4 million homes, and it's right next to a suburb where I bought St Andrews, where the home median price would be close to about $600 today. So I knew straight away that, you know, there potentially may be a bit of a catch-up effect. It was located close to the M5. It was located close to the stations, being Minto Station. It had shopping centres not too far away from it. And it was in a very good suburb, I would say, a suburb that was not dominated by renters, but more so by home occupiers or owners, home owners in that instance. So I knew straight away that it had a good street appeal and it had a good foundation for a property to increase in value. And those are the real basis that I look at. I don't want to be into a very heavily rent-dominated area because there's a lot of competition. Also, sometimes the area can unfortunately be dragged down a little bit because maybe some people aren't as proud of their home as it's not theirs. I also look for infrastructure, so schools. The local school was only around the corner. It had many different child centres as well. Had a shopping centre and a very small local shops and a very large shops all within about 5 kilometres. It had a train station within about 5 kilometres. It had entrance onto the M5 heading towards Narellan within a couple kilometres and entrance towards the M5 and M7 within about a 5 to 10 kilometre radius. So it had all the different attractions and foundations that I wanted from a property portfolio as far as infrastructure, schools, amenities, as well as just a nice suburb. Mm. So it really ticked all my boxes from what I had seen and what I saw was a good property as well.
For Anazani, his worst investing moment came from branching out his portfolio without the base knowledge that supported his other purchases. But from this came the lesson that quality, not quantity, makes the portfolio.
I don't tend to share too much of my bad stories, but I definitely will on this particular instance. Mate, I bought about 3 or 4 properties, or had about 4 or 5 properties, I can't remember at that particular stage, and I was all about, well, I've got some properties that cost me a little bit of money, not a lot. At that stage, interest rates were a lot different and the rents were a lot different. Things have since looked up since then, but I was all about cash flow at that stage. I said, well, I've got to support this property portfolio. I don't want to spend any money out of my back pocket. So I started to look for very cash flow properties. And I found an area in Cowra, which is regional Australia, about probably 6-7 hours, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less away from Sydney. And I bought a duplex, genuine duplex, 2 lettings, and I paid about $160,000 for it. The rent on that duplex with both of them rented was about $340 to $360 per week, so genuinely cash flow property. problem was is that getting tenants to stay there longer than 3 to 6 months became a very real problem. And getting both sides rented of that duplex was also a very, very real problem as well. And initially, that property, that for the 12 months that I had it, I probably had both sides of the duplex rented for no longer than about 1 month or 2 months. Therefore, I was only really obtaining between 130 and 160 a week. And that cash flow property was quite cash negative in the end. Quite a bit of repairs and maintenance had to be done on that particular property, as the tenants that I was getting weren't fantastic. So that journey, unfortunately, was a journey for me that I realised quite quickly that, you know, it's about the condition, it's about the location, rather than just about pure cash flow. And the property really didn't grow by much in that 12 months. I was able to exit that property after 12 months for relatively the same price, a little bit more, obviously, take into account stamp duty and commissions. I walked out with that property fairly break-even. But it was a very good lesson for me to learn, because I tried to speed up the property portfolio rather than continue to what I knew best was foundations, infrastructure, amenities. And it comes down to maybe a little bit of greed as well. You know, I wanted more properties. I wanted the number rather than the quality. So I learned very quickly again that it's not about the number of properties you have. It's the quality of the portfolio. And it's how the portfolio performs as a whole in capital growth, in cash flow, rather than just focusing purely on just one facet of investing, which is cash flow.
This is a common journey for beginning property investors, valuing cash flow over anything else. The idea of not having to pull money out of their own pockets in the short term is very enticing.
It's a very common conversation I have with my clients. You know, we talk about, does $2,000 a year really change your life, passive income? And I always say that we need to understand what are we getting into it for. $2,000 a year, while it does help, it's not going to be as lucrative or as profitable as a potential $50,000 to $60,000 capital growth in the space of, say, 1 or 2 years. So I tend to really ask my clients that, what's the purpose of this property? What is your goal? What is your objective? What are you aiming to achieve? And if a couple grand per year is what you want, then that property might be a very good fit for your portfolio. But if you're after a bit more of a rapid acquisition plan, where you are looking to buy, release equity and continue the portfolio buying again, then we really need to understand, well, does $2,000 help offset any potential capital growth that we could get from a property that may cost us $2,000? But it's not to say that a cash flow property can't be a capital growth property. So we do need to really look at the individual property that we are buying in the basis of its location and what positives and negatives it does have.
Although we may have already covered Anazani's worst investing moment, there is still much for you listeners to learn about property investing from the first property that he bought.
This property was a very sentimental property, as it is my first property that I ever bought. I had tenants in there, and I really started to see the clear indications that things weren't going right. I was very behind in when I say I, the tenants were very behind in rent. It was actually about 10 weeks in arrears before I really started to ask what's going on. What else is happening to the property? If they're not paying rent, is there other things that are happening that I'm not aware of? So we got onto the property manager, and the property manager went through all the processes of tribunal and other things and finally removed the tenants after about 18 weeks. And again, that was a bit of a learning curve and a bit of a journey to go through about the processes of getting a tenant out. It is quite a lengthy process. It's not a matter of asking them to leave. There is avenues to go through by tribunals, second tribunals and sheriffs. So I learned quite quickly that, you know, buffers in place were very important. But when I saw that property's condition after the tenants left during that 18-week period, mate, it was completely a different property. Doors missing, stolen ovens, stolen hot water systems, holes in walls, drawings, feces on the floor. You name it, mate, this property was absolutely ruined.
From there was even more hard work and heartache for him, as he had to pay for the damages of the tenants. But the silver lining is the education this experience gave him for the rest of his property investing journey.
And in the end, mate, it did cost me about $35,000 in actual physical cash to repair this property, and that was just to bring it back up to a rentable state. No major renovations occurred, just more so fixing up kitchens and replacing things, putting back ovens, obviously ripping up carpets and polishing floorboards, repairing holes in walls, paintings, new hot water system. So a lot of the things were more repair in nature rather than a huge cosmetic upgrade. But then what I did, and this is where the little bit of the silver lining came through, was I did have landlord insurance. And that landlord insurance did cover some of the costs. And I think by memory, I got back close to about 15,000 out of 35. So that did help quite a bit. Having to spend only 20 out of my back pocket as opposed to 35 was a huge help. But the silver lining was that the value of that property went from about 380 at that last valuation stage closer to about 500. So by spending that $35,000 less the 15, about 20 out of my back pocket, I was able to get a market value from the bank of 500K, and I was able to actually extract a further $100,000 from that property. And that extraction of equity led on to property number, you know, 6, 7, 8, and I think I'm still using maybe some of that equity today for deposits and for other things for the property. So a little bit of silver lining out of a very bad situation. But again, it taught me a lot of lessons. Obviously, number one, to keep on top of things, don't let things go too far. You know, I'm always constantly checking up with my agents to ensure how things are traveling with my properties. I do request my agents to go visit them at least a couple times, maybe 3 or 4 times a year if they can. And I do try where possible to visit the property because I didn't visit that property for a couple years. So again, a lot of things I learnt, being quite green in the property investment journey and all things that have helped me. Yes, it's cost me a bit of money, but on the other side, it's been a fantastic experience for my development and contributed quite a bit to a number of the procedures that I implement today.
That learning experience of his first property definitely gave Anazani some aha moments of realization and allowed him to grow as a property investor.
Typically, I invest in the lower socioeconomic areas, so I'm always going through some trials and tribulations at any one point in time. So it's one of those things that I always make sure that I do have my buffers in place, and I try to keep at least 3 to 6 months of all my expenses, of all my interest for my properties as a buffer amount. That just, you know, for me, it gives me that very good safety net that if my property portfolio as a whole was not rented, there would be enough money to cover it for at least three months, maximum of maybe 6, depending how I can stretch it. Very rarely will you have your whole property portfolio not rented, but at any one point in time, I may have one property or two properties not rented. I may have everything rented for a period of time. So it really comes down to the buffers that are in place. That's very important, number one. And probably I suppose another bad one that I've had is probably just tenants, mainly more tenant-related issues, where they do some things to neighbours or, you know, and it causes you a lot of grief. Not necessarily have you done anything wrong, but you're dragged through the mud when tenants destroy neighbours' properties or potentially affect neighbours quite a bit, maybe their health or mental health. So those have been a couple other things that I found quite interesting about the property investment journey was just, you know, that you are responsible for your tenants that are inside your house, even though they may not be doing anything to your house. And something at someone else's house, you are potentially responsible for that.
Overcoming issues like this takes time and foresight, two things that he has mastered over his property investment journey.
Keeping a finger on the pulse, and I had some good property managing in place, so we're able to get rid of the tenant, you know, able to evict the tenant on a number of different grounds. So those are the things that I've implemented. I'm having some good real estate agents, very knowledgeable about the property management space. And it's been good, mate. It's been good because the last thing we want to do as a landlord is put someone in your house, number one, who can damage your house, but number two, you know, disrupt the, I suppose, the neighbourhood because in the end, these people are your neighbours whether you live there or not. And, you know, it's good. I think it's a good thing to be good to your neighbours because if the property is not rented or even if it is rented, you do want your neighbours on your side who are telling you when things are happening or just generally overlooking your house to make sure nothing does happen. So be good to your neighbours, mate. That's what I can always say.
With all this experience and knowledge under his belt, Anazani is excited for the next step of his property investment journey.
I've taken the next step in the property investment journey more now into a construction and development phase. So I'm going back through my existing portfolio and finding where I can add value, and that value could be through some subdivision, that value could be through some granny flats, that value could be through some knockdown and rebuilds or knockdown and duplexes. So I've always tried to buy properties number one, I've tried to buy properties where I see the value, but number two, I've always tried to look for properties where there's a bit of a twist, where there's a bit of a value add. I'm a big believer in manufacturing equity. I'm not a huge fan of just letting Mr. Time take its toll or take its place in its journey. I'm a big fan of manufacturing equity where we can. So for me now, it's all about going through my existing portfolio and improving it, number one, from a cash flow perspective, and number two, from a capital growth perspective. And so I can utilize those funds to go ahead and chase the next stage of my journey, which is more the development side. So I'm in a couple of things with some family and also a couple of things with some clients or friends of mine. And I want to do a couple of things for myself, whether it's just buy a small block of land, subdivide it and do a townhouse development or a unit development, but nothing on a big scale, everything on a very small scale. So that's what I'm most excited about my investment property journey, mate. It's getting into that next stage.
This new strategy of buy, add value, then drive equity and jump onto the next property is his unique version of the traditional buy and hold.
I always believe that you should have a good portfolio where it is a buy and hold portfolio because you do need that solid foundation to work from. It's very hard to, jump into it straight away and being very green in the overall, I suppose, transaction trying to develop something. So it is a process I believe every client should go through or every person should go through, which is buy your solid foundation properties, things that are not going to lose your money, but help and aid you to make money. And then that's where you can go back and extract some equity to look at some different things and different alternatives and different options with inside the property investment journey you're in.
So, inspired by this story and what Jeremy Anazani is excited about today, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode on Property Investory Podcast, where we talk about how to apply the strategy.
So I really had an aggressive saving strategy, which was all very important in my portfolio.
The resources that he sought.
I had a lot of resources. I used, we all use realestate.com and domain, but I really utilized realestate.com.
And what learning devices he recommends for aspiring property investors.
I like to listen to, obviously, a lot of podcasts, such as what yourself, Tyrone, that you're doing.
And that's in a future episode on Property Investory Podcast. Thanks for listening.